sheep.
Mangustan is sheep. Bear.
Makwa.
Makun. Makuns.
Iminun. Something like that.
Makuns.
It's a little baby bear.
That's a cub. Makadebi Shiki, isn't it?
Mashkudebishiki.
That's prairie. Bison or buffalo.
A badger.
I wouldn't know that.
A moose?
Moose.
Is this like a moose? A dog. Retriever. It's a retriever dog, one that goes out and brings birds back out of the water. Nanda Shube Watson, something like that.
That's a dog that gets ducks, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a horse. That I don't know.
Nagig? Is that an otter?
Yeah.
Nagig?
I suppose.
Bullfrog.
Bullfrog. What is?
Odanda?
I never heard that.
How do you say frog? Omakaki?
Yeah, makaki.
A large frog.
Makaki.
That's one I know, a rabbit.
A wabus. That's easy.
Gray reindeer.
What is it?
Looks like Wabadik.
Gray reindeer, that. Wabadik or something.
A gray and spotted fawn or a big deer.
Wagush, that's fox.
Oh.
Wagush.
And muskrat. Okay.
Muskrat is you try to see.
It looks like Washauska.
Washauskins, a baby muskrat. Washauskins.
Washkins. Is that a deer?
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the word Washika comes
from. Hoot owl. Something like that.
Flying squirrel. Shagashandawe.
Flying squirrel, that I don't know.
Skunk. Chicag.
And what's that? Weasel. I know what a weasel is.
Jingoose?
Jingoose? It must be jingoose.
Come there, I'll get it, will you?
And I don't remember. Crawfish, shagishi. That's a crab.
Black horse, some kind of berry. blackberries this morning.
Black hawks. Isn't it? Hawks?
Yeah.
Black hawks. Now I know that. Are they taming them?
Yeah, that's it.
Are they taming them, this black hawks? Plums.
Pagisanan.
Is plums. Uh-huh. That I don't know.
Choke cherries.
Oh, choke cherries is a...
Asasa way.
What do they call choke cherries? This. Well, I know how to say choke cherries now. Don't come to me.
Looks like Asasa way. Minum.
As a swimming man. That's it there. Where are we?
Here. June berries,
is that all?
Gojiguan Kuminum.
Gojiguan Kuminum?
Yeah.
That's June berries, Gojiguan Kuminum.
And Logan berry?
That I would know.
Looks like Macadamia.
Cranberries, that's Mashiki Minan.
Yeah. Bean. How did you say bean?
Miskadisi Minan. Blueberries.
Looks like mini. I
don't know. What's that? It's
mini? Well, that's a bean.
That's a bean, and this is a...
Blueberry.
Minan.
Oh.
Minan is blueberries.
Oh, yeah.
Minan, blueberries.
Then pin cherries, what is that? Little cherries, I suppose.
Pin cherries, I wouldn't know.
They're cool, maybe, or something like that. Blackberries.
Blackberries, macadamisco minan.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Raspberries. Miskuminan. Raspberries.
Strawberries.
Odeminan. The strawberries.
Yeah, that's the same one.
Yeah, that's the same.
That's a gooseberry.
Huh?
Gooseberries.
I don't believe I know. Shabu minan. You know, they got ticks on it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they call them that.
Oh.
You know, some of those green ones, they have pickers on them.
Oh.
Grapes, shabu minan. Grapes.
Wintergreen berries.
That I wouldn't know.
You see what these are?
I did hear.
Duck.
Duck.
That's all right, that's another one. This we can do this one. Start with birds. Crow.
Crow. Ande.
Yeah.
Ande.
Then a pheasant.
A pheasant, I wouldn't know.
Looks like Bena. Bena?
Bene, yeah.
And a screech owl. Kakabishi.
Yeah, Kakabishi. I
see a raven. Dagi.
Poco. The owl. Coco.
Coco. Looks like Coco.
Uh-huh. A butterfly. Memingua.
Woodpeckers.
That I wouldn't know.
Like Mimi.
Mimi. Oh, yeah.
Loon. Mung?
Mung? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. A loon is a mung.
I see hummingbird.
That I wouldn't know.
It looks like Menokasi.
Yeah. That's the way it sounds, Menokasi. Me?
A goose. Nika?
Nika, yeah. Nika. Chicken hawk or
Zucchini biquasti, looks like. Oreo.
Oreo, I wouldn't know.
Pigeon dough?
Pigeon, umimi.
Oh.
That's a pigeon. Turtle dove, umimi.
Little robin.
Upichi.
Oh.
Upichi is a wobbin. Wobbin. Upichi is a wobbin.
Be a blue jay or a kingfisher.
I wouldn't know that. Shingibis, that's a,
little hen?
Isn't that Shingibis?
Yeah.
That's a helldiver.
Oh.
But it says a small rice hen.
No, that's it, a great diver.
Huh?
A great diver.
Yeah, a great diver. That's Shingibis.
And here's a little snowbird.
Snowbird.
Wabanagose.
Yeah. That I wouldn't know.
No, a swan?
A swan of Wabi. Wabisi? Mm-hmm. Wabisi or something.
It looks like
I wouldn't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
A whale.
A whale?
Oh, that's a whale. Sturgeon.
Whale.
How do you say a sturgeon?
I
Name?
Name must... Well, there's some fish that's called Name bin, but that ain't that. That's just Name, eh?
Yeah, I bet that's a big starfish, though, Name bin. Yeah. Now, let's see.
What's this here?
All kinds of fish.
Uh-huh.
All kinds of fish. I guess just the word fish. But there's one word that says the biggest word...
Huh?
There's one word, let's see. I don't know what to ask Tom because I'm doing it. Let's see. Where's that one? Do you know how to say blackberry pie or is it blueberry pie? That one that's the biggest, longest word?
No. I don't. Macadamus. That's all I know.
I think
that's a blackberry pie.
That's it.
Is it in here?
It's in there someplace.
Oh.
I'm trying to see.
Makati Baskimina Bequajigan. They have more to it. That's all. That's a blackberry pie. Makati Baskimina Sigana Bequajigan.
I bet that's it. This one, you know, elm tree?
Huh?
These are trees now.
What's
elm tree?
I would know that.
Let's see, meaning of high bush cranberry without the bush.
Oh.
High bush cranberry. Looks like Anubimina.
Well, that's Anubimina, that's, yeah, that's cranberries.
Mm. And then poplar tree.
Popple tree?
Poplar, yeah. Asadi?
Asadi, yeah, that's popple.
A willow, looks like gibbons?
Gibbons, well, I suppose that's, gibbons is just like a whip, you know.
Oh.
Shingwalk, that's a Norway pine.
Oh.
Shingwalk.
It's a fir tree. This one's a fir tree. Any nadam?
Fir balsam. Oh no, that's... I don't know.
Oak tree.
Huh?
Do you know how to say oak tree?
Yeah, oak tree is
like Miti Gomish.
See, kind of say it, and then I...
Yeah, like Miti Gomish?
Miti Gomish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Minty Gumish.
And Cottonwood. No, no, Sadi?
That I would Mona know. She go be mug. That's at Cottonwood. Walsalda.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
What's the Abbey Quail Dog?
Which one? This one?
Yeah, on the top.
Two words for spruce. Looks like she be quadug. She be quadug?
That's spruce, huh?
Yeah.
Shingo big.
Oh. Birch. How do you say birch?
Birch. Wigwas.
Oh.
Yes, we had that.
Yeah. Maple. You know how to say maple?
Maple?
Uh-huh. Soft maple. It looks like Zishigimewanch. Zishigimewanch.
Maple. I know maple, though I can. I know what maple is in Indian, but I
just can't think.
Yeah. Agudash?
Well, those are just, that's all right, because I guess those are just funny words.
Huh?
They aren't funny, but I mean they're just little ones that aren't too important. Those were real good. How did you say brave again? Okichita? Okichita.
Okichita.
Brave.
Brave?
Yeah, the army was just asking what I said.
Oh.
Small lake. Aga, Sigab.
Agasa is small.
Mm.
Agawa. Mm.
No, not yet.
Why, you've heard that story so many times.
Well, I don't care, because I think it's a better story.
Well, I...
Well, I'm stuck.
What shall I tell about? Shall I tell about Andes Wardina?
Yeah.
How he went to...
I think the one about the moon, the big thing that came over the house.
Oh.
Well, I don't care, just so you tell someone, I think myself.
Well, I think I better tell about Andes, maybe, or something. It doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, that really was serious with this old grandma. She was really and truly concerned, very concerned about what was happening, but she hadn't said anything to us about it. You know, I didn't know one thing about what was going on. But after it was all quiet and everyone's gone, she came to me and she said, now, child, she said, I know you won't laugh at me if I tell you this. She said, I don't want the others to hear me because they'll laugh at me. So I said, no, I said, I wouldn't laugh. So then she told me, she said, maybe you noticed that the Grand Medicine are in session. That was up at Twin Lakes. And I said, yes, I'd heard the drum. You know how they beat that drum when they're in session, and they've been there for a week or so, so they were going very, very good. So anyway, I don't know who told her or why, how it came to her, but for some reason she had an enemy. One of the neighbors that wasn't too far away, by the name of Masquades. He was peeved at her for something she had done, and she said that she didn't feel a bit good about it because she thought he didn't mean to do anything that was good for her. That was her way of expressing it. So she said, being that band medicine was in session there, she had heard that there was something being whispered around that was going to be done or something. Somehow she'd gotten this word. So then she told me to come with her after she found I would laugh at her and was anxious to hear what she had to say. So we went out and went around the house, past a great pine tree, and we stood there by this tree. And so she told me. I said, well, what do you think will happen? I said, what will we see or how will we know when anything is taking place? And she said, well, as a rule, they send out something in the form of a light, she said. Sometimes like a ball of fire. Well, that could be. And I said, well, where will it appear? High or will it be low? She said, it'll be high. It'll be up high, she said, above the trees. Well, we stood there. It wasn't very, very many minutes before we did see this ball of fire coming. And I thought, oh, she shouldn't have been frightened. I thought, that's the harvest moon. I said, I believe that's the harvest moon. And she said, oh, she was very frightened. You could tell she was very frightened. And she said, no, it isn't the harvest moon. So then I looked and I too realized it wasn't the harvest moon. It was very plain to be seen that it was too low for the harvest moon. It was flying much too low for the harvest moon. And it was, it moved in sort of a jerky fashion. It would settle a little bit, then it would jerk a little bit and settle again. Two little jerks and settle again. And it was coming towards us. So when it got, almost where we were, and she said it wouldn't be good if it settled over the house. It would mean that there would be a death there, or there would be destruction of some kind to their home, their stock, or their people. So when it came that far, she said as long as we were brave enough to go out there and meet it, that was the only thing that would stop it. So so pale and frightened, Alco. And so she said, what shall we do? And I said, well, if you're very, very frightened, I said, you make the sign of the cross, and that will help you. That will give you strength. And she did. So we walked out on into the road, and just as we got, directly in front of it, although it was high, you see, among the trees, it stopped. It settled. And then it settled for, maybe a second or so. Then it shot right out across the lake. Just in a sharp angle, it went right across the lake, and where it went, I don't know. That was the end. This moon does look like a great ball of fire. But of course, and this was the very identical color of the harvest moon, a reddish fire, you know, great ball it was. But it was flying so very, very low, I noticed it was almost touching the treetops as it came. And of course, I knew then it wasn't the harvest moon. And that little jerky, the harvest moon doesn't move like that, we know that. But it was just a reddish light, just a great reddish light, an immense large light, too, like a great ball. And it stopped, but there wasn't anything on that light that you could tell, distinguish anything on it at all. Just fire, just a round ball of fire. But it stopped, and it did. It shot across the lake, that Snyder Lake there. Edison Lodge was meeting. Oh, that is supposed to be, they have that power, you know, to send that light out at their will, to do just as she said. If they have an enemy or somebody that they want to, what will we say? They want to do something, punish them or to annoy them in some way, and or something like that, and really destroy something that they have, to really hurt them. Yeah. I have never heard. Well, yes, I too have heard that they do good things, but not with that light. Not with that light. That I didn't see. Because I'm not a bit afraid, or not, I'm not superstitious or anything like that. But this Andes, this is an old fellow, no, his name is Andes Wadena. They called him that. And it was during the, what investigation was it? There was an investigation up there because the land had been sold, and only those who were mixed bloods were supposed to sell their land. And they did. And so when the investigation came on, they found that many that were on the records as full bloods had sold their land as mixed bloods. So this old fellow, this Andes, Wadena, had been on the stand that day, and he talked and talked and talked and talked. And while he was talking, just before he was through, possibly it was a stroke, but he lost his speech, and he couldn't talk. And when the time came for him to get up and to walk away, he couldn't walk. And of course, all the people there, you know, his people, declared he was grand medicined. If someone in the audience there that was a friend of these other people had grand medicined him, had him grand medicined. So he went on, and he came to visit me, and he told me all about how the white medicine man had helped him a lot, because he could talk, he could understand what he was saying, and he could get about with a cane. Well, so that was all right. Then went on, this was in the summer when he was visiting me, just after this investigation. So that fall, we were looking out the window across the creek way down there, and Grandma Snyder said to me, "Child, isn't that old man Andes coming along in that park?" And I said, "Oh," I said, "I couldn't tell at that distance it could be." And they had one of these light wagons, they used to call them, light wagon. And he was sitting in the back of the light wagon, and there were two other men driving. And as they came up closer and closer, the road ran just before the house. And as it came closer and closer, and the wagon got right across from us, we looked out the window. Sure enough, it was Andes. And how did we know him? He had hurried and had gotten down the back of this car, and he lay down with his head towards the back end. There's a board across, you know how boxes are made. And he'd forgotten to tuck under his little stocking cap that he always wore. And he had his stocking cap out and his tassel all covered up, he was like something to be delivered. She said, "Look, there is his old cap." And I said, "There truly is. There is his cap. He was going up." "Oh," she said, "that old rascal, he's going up there to the grand medicine to be cured." And that's what he was doing. He had been around every place else, and they didn't cure him, so he was on his way to the grand medicine. And you know what? He really went. And strange as it may seem, when I saw him again, he could walk. Sure he did.
He didn't want anybody to know he was going?
He didn't want us to know he was going up there, because he had already embraced the Christian religion. And this is pagan, you know. And he didn't want us to know that there was a combination of both pagan and Christianity in him. So here he was with his little stocking cap hanging out the back of the car. Oh, it was just kidding. That's one thing they are, the grandest talkers. And they just seem to get right up. Oh, women do not talk. But the men do. And they get up and there's sort of a majestic air about them. They're all just like a pine tree. So straight, and they always hold their head. You know, many people do that when they're talking too, but they don't. They always stand with their head right up, as if they're talking to something way up high.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he's a very good talker. He didn't talk that day. He was hiding. Oh, Andes.
Did he talk only in English, or did he talk in...
Oh, no, he couldn't hardly speak any English.
Oh, he did talk
No, that. His English was very, very, very poor. Maybe one or two words you kind of get out what he was trying to say. Yeah, but he spoke the Ojibwe. Old rascal, like Grandma Cassandra said, "There's that old rascal." Wasn't that killing, Nat Nell? Nat Nell had been teaching, she taught. She's quite a bit older than I was. That's Anita's mother. Well, what am I going to tell about that?
Just
there's nothing to it.
For the station, that's so cute.
Oh, it really, I'll never forget that, because it just stood out, you know. We got to this little station called Ogima.
You know Ogima,
Oh, yeah.
That little city, that little village called Ogima. Black as midnight.
On the train, were you?
Yeah, we were on the train. The Northern Pacific, I believe. It was a Sioux Line, then it was called. and stopped it with a
bite. You wrote?
You were scalped. Well, anyway, we got there, and this was open mouth. Dark. The station was perfectly dark. It looked just like these little small stations you see in little villages, you know, the small little red station house they have. That was all right. It stopped, and we gingerly got off the car. Black. There wasn't a light in one window, not one around. And Nell wanted to be very brave, you know. She wanted to show me that she could go about. I was the cowardly one, you know.
Was it just the two of you?
Yes. The folks had gone on ahead, and she was still teaching out at Jarrett's, Minnesota, so I waited for her. I stayed with a friend, Maine DeShaney, until she was through about, just about 2-3 days. She had finished school. Then we went out together. I really wanted her moral support, because she always was brave, you know. I was a cowardly one. So I waited for her, and we went out. And when we got to this little station, it was so dark, and there we stood. We couldn't see a thing. The only thing that I recall that was pleasant was the smell of the earth. You know, they had rain, it was warm, and you could smell that fresh earth and the rain, like the spring, you know. And I thought, oh, how wonderful that was, anyway. And you know, in the dark, we could see piles of lumber. I was thinking about it afterwards. Great piles of lumber. And way off in the distance, there's a little lantern on this lumber, you know, to guide people to stay away, danger. Well, as we stood there, some man came to us. I don't know what he looked like. It was so dark. And so Nell said, well, aren't there any taxis? Or isn't there a bus running? Uh-huh. And they said, no. She wasn't so brave right that minute. There wasn't any taxis, and there wasn't a bus. And so, but another man was very courteous, and he stepped up and he said, of course he was a Frenchman, and he said, just ask this man right here. He's a very nice man. He will show you the way, and he will take you home. That sounded kind of good to me. Well, that accent helped a little bit anyhow. So we did. This fellow's name is Pete Martin. And the platform around this station was quite high, you know. And the horses would be, well, you could just get into a carriage easily from the station. It was high enough that you could step right in. So there we looked in the dark. And he had a lantern, of course, on this, what do they call it? They call it, I don't know what it was. Something like a surrey is what it was like.
Yeah.
With 3 or 4 seats in it. Well, anyway, they pulled up to the side. He stood there holding those wild horses. And they were just jumping in the dark, and I could see it. So he said, well, now don't, just get right in. And there were 2 other men, I believe. Yes, there were 2 that were going the same place we were. That is over to White Earth. So they got in, too. They got right in. They said, now don't be afraid. Get right in. We got in. We had all kind of bundles, all kind of luggage, and oh, we had been just growling all the way because we had carried our mother's bird in a cage. Clearly, we didn't dare to leave it any place, or we would have added in the end of us. Then we had that awful old bird in the bird cage. I think of it. Wasn't that awful? So it's out that way. Well, anyway, we got in this surrey or whatever it was called. And you know, well, I hardly got in it. We're seated, and those horses just tore in the air. And you understand, the driver was still on the platform, holding the lines out on the side. Oh, my land, I don't know how I went out, but one of the men from behind just grabbed me right by the back, and I was out of the carriage before I knew it. Birdcage and all.
You were out?
Yes. They were scared to death. Scared to death of the horses. And they both climbed out. They were in the seat. There were about 4 seats in this carry-all that was. And he just grabbed me by the back of the coat, and out we went out that place. And I was so shaking by that time, I didn't know what to do. It was cold, too, you know. And those horses were jumping. They did a lot of stunts before they ever stopped, you know. Then we had to get back in. That was the only thing to take us over there in. Everybody piled. You know, that happened to us twice. We had to climb out of that thing before you could control those horses. Well, the last time we got in, and yet everyone knew they had to go that way. So we all got in again. And we started off. He drove those wild horses. Well, that was a good one. That fellow on that car, well, that was a good one. He was sitting there still as two mice. The fellow on the car says, "Where's that damn two pretty girls?" Frenchman, you know, he's saying, "Them. Where are damn pretty girls?" And the other, nobody answered, you know. Not a he kept, you know, he's had a little more than he needed to drink, you see. He kept that up and kept it up. So finally nudged and nudged him. Oh, he said, "The honest bus." He discovered they were on this bus. No one said yes, no one said no. There was another peep out of him. Well, he thought he'd talk about everything else then. He changed the subject and, they visited with him. And Pete said that as he was driving, you know, he said, "Well," he said, "Mike," he said, "this fellow's name was Mike LaChapelle. So when you get home," he said, "I suppose there'll be a merrymaking. You've been gone for a couple of weeks or 10 days," he said, "and I suppose your wife will be awfully glad to see you." So right away I began to wonder, you know, just what his wife would be like and what this merrymaking would be like. And we'd go hubbub over that old road, you know. And we came to this little house. It seemed to stand right on the road as we went up the hill. That was his home. He stopped. And out he got. "Look," he said, "Mike, she's waiting for you. Here's something stood in the doorway with a lamp in her hand. And her hair scooped up like a Bermuda onion on top of her head. And such a mean little face as she had. A little bit of a woman. And here she held this lamp up above her head. Did she ever tear after him in both English and French?" Of all the names I almost passed out. So that, as Nat and Nell says, so that's the merriment. Why, I don't know how he got by him in the door. I don't know what she had in her hand to hang him with, that I don't know. But that lamp, holding up that lamp, Andrew, well, you could see her so well against the background being black. But here she was with that light. After that was a merrymaking. So we left that place and I thought, now what in the world will be next? Well, really, she frightened you. So we got up the hill. The next stop, this other man was B.L. Fairbanks. He got off just a block away from this man, where this man last lived. So we went on up the hill and we came to this little house. And he stopped. Here we both sat in this surrey, never budged. And we looked at the place. And neither said a word. We didn't know what to say. Neither said one word. Finally, I said, "Well," he said, "just go right in. He'd like to have us get out of his car." And I said, "I know Mel. This is the barn." They looked, but he didn't say a word. And she nudged me, you know. She didn't want him to know that we were that ignorant. We didn't know where we were. So we got out, and he took our poor little luggage out, and he said, "Just go right in," he said, "and knock on the door." He said, the old gentleman isn't well," he said, "and there's always someone home with him. They never leave him alone. So there's someone there. Now you must remember, on that side there wasn't one ray of light, not a peep of a light anyplace. There was a door ahead, we knew that, from his lights." So we said, "Yes, we'd do that," and Nell did in her most... I don't know what you'd say, boys. We both sat down on the little front until he got away. Then we were going to do our hunting. And she said, "Well, let's go around this way." And we got off. We went through hazel bushes and everything, scratching ourselves, and we went around. And when we came to the front of the house, evidently we'd come aside. When we came to the front of the house, there was a glass door, some windows. We could see a light. I was so scared, and she said, "Wait, I'll soon find out." And they had been fixing a step, and I think it needed about three steps to reach the door. But they had been taken away because they were being made over. So there wasn't anything there. So I can see her, she got up on that little ledge, you know, she hung onto the door, she peered in. She said, "Come on, take a look and see what you think. I think this is it, all right." So I got up and I said, yes, it must be our house. Look at our rug. There's Dad's chair. And we looked at, yes, it was. And we both got down like two mice. By that time, my mother heard the voices. Why, she was so surprised to see us. "Why, didn't you let us know you were coming?" And, well, we just came anyhow. Well, Alice, we both stood. We didn't... Well, it was just a sickening feeling. That couldn't be our home. And yet, she said, why, come in the house, you foolish children. Why are you standing there? So we went in. And my dad wasn't well. He hadn't walked for a number of years, you know. So he was already in bed. And my mother went to get dressed. And she said... And he was in bed, because it takes some time to get up, you know. He wasn't going to get up, because we'd see him in the morning. So what did we do? We went for the kitchen. We went through the little living room. They had fixed it really up so it looked like a house. And we'd gone through into this little living room, out into the kitchen. There was a nice bright light burning, but we couldn't see it from outside. And maybe somebody lighted the light, I don't know, the lamp. So what did we do? Here was our, we opened the door, and we got our trunk in, and our suitcases in, and that little trunk is the one that Ab had. She took that to Europe with her. A little square trunk that I had. And it was such a, just a small little square trunk like that. That was the middle of the kitchen floor. And we looked around. The kitchen was, oh, so very clean. And, oh, there was some lovely pie made and some cinnamon rolls over there. But we were starving to death, and we were so frightened that we couldn't even eat the rolls. And as she said, if we only felt better, we'd eat every one of them up so they'd have nothing. But you know, and all the while we sat on this trunk, we could smell muskmelon. Because where she had been teaching, they had given her, she didn't tell them where she was going. They thought she was just going home. They'd given her three or four little muskmelons. And you know how loud they smell. Here we sat on that, and we waited. Then my mother came and we asked where they were. She said, well, you know, those, I don't know where those boys went. She said, in that net, she said, was foolish enough to go along with them. She said, I tried to tell her to stay home, but she wouldn't stay. She had to go with them. And we were wondering where in the world it could go, just black as night all over. So, and she went back to talk to Dad. Finally, we heard a little noise at the door. The door opened. She came in first, and Aunt Nettie came in first. Well, she almost passed out when she saw the two of us sitting on the front of the back kitchen, you know. And next came the boys, and lo and behold, behind them came this tall pine tree. Well, I tell you, that's the time I was surprised. Behind her came Uncle Joe. Well, and he said, he didn't speak good English because he spoke nearly all French. And I don't know how in the world those two talked together for the life of me. But he said to her, this is our oldest child. This is our baby. This is our youngest child on this town. And you know, I was paralyzed. Here was this Aunt Mary, he told us her name was Aunt Mary. And she had a, I don't know what kind of a skirt, a kind of a calico skirt, you know, cotton. And she had a blouse. Yes, of course, it was a blouse. And you know what? I never saw anything like it. As frightened as I was, I couldn't help but notice how lovely it was made. You know, how fit and everything. And the beautiful buttonholes on it. All the way, she must have had about 10 places for 10 buttons, buttonholes made. Every one of them had a safety pin in them. Every one of them stood out, a safety pin. Oh, I was really scared. And she had a braid down the back. And an apron on, and full of the red, the blue, and the white check was really almost an inch square. They were such big squares. That was, this is your aunt, that old rascal. But the others kind of slunked off and never said a word. They both all looked. They didn't say a word. This is your aunt. What did she proceed to do? They proceeded to bang me on the top of the head with the flat of their hand. And kiss me on the head. Matt Mill said, I'm glad I'm not the youngest baby on this time. Oh, how I suffered that night. Really almost banged my brains out. She had saved this old Uncle Joe's life. He was very ill with pneumonia, so that's the story he told us. And he was almost going to die, he said. And she saved him with her medicine. And he promised her, if she'd save his life, he'd marry her. Now, that was her reward. No, right. There's not very many. And she really, really was a grand medicine woman. And she was, it means a very high degree when they can mark their faces, put on a certain color of paint, and I think tie a ribbon on their hair in the back, a certain color. Mm-hmm. And she had that privilege. And at the, when they'd have the dances, what did they call that now? Well, it comes the 14th of June. What in the world was that? Oh, that's when the Sioux and the Ojibwees united as friends, became friends.
Oh.
And that's when they were reconciled to one another, and then they celebrated together. Mm-hmm. The Sioux came over and visited June.
Oh.
That's what it was. And so when they had those dances, that she had the privilege of sitting, a ring, they always form a great ring, and the drummers have a position, and these grand medicine women, and I don't think there's more than three or four of them, three about anyway that I saw, had a right to come in, and that's unusual for women, you know,
mm-hmm.
but see, they had the right to come sit.
Is this room. Some power that innately is in them, or do they learn it?
I don't know. There, it's handed down, because they'll speak of anyone that, well, it's a religion to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like we took a child to be baptized, and we have a sponsor for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some member of the Grand Medicine must sponsor anyone that comes in, that they take in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very careful about who they take in. They do sponsor someone that's in, you know, I mean, to be brought in as a candidate or something. And then there's a number of, what would you call it? I wonder, what do they call it? You know, as you enter, and then there's another place you have to go through. And they're very severe, they say, in there. You never know who he is.
Oh, you don't know him.
While he's there.
Oh.
Might see him outside, but one would never know him.
Never know him.
But, what was I going to say about them?
Somebody linked you as it is, I mean, it's kind of natural that they would take the sun and square things for the earth and things like that. Would you tell the story too about what happened about Mike LaChapelle, about when he got his money and how he had the store in the mountains?
They have a daughter living in St. Paul. It's terrible.
We heard her if you tell the story.
Yeah, that little woman, the one that took the light of everything. First I thought she looked like the goddess of liberty, but after I heard her, she wasn't the goddess anymore. Oh, she was terrible.
How do you mean?
Oh, the language she used.
Oh,
she
the little woman at the door.
Oh, my land, my land. And those men just about died. Like. He should have been back much sooner than he was. So she was waiting for him all night. Oh, I think of it.
Tell about his story, though, when they got the allotment.
The same guy, the same
country? Yeah, what did he do? Oh, he got the store, the juice store.
That's his store. What's called the juice store.
Yeah.
A little green place, you know.
He thought that'd be a big name.
Yeah,
he named it?
That was it, the juice store. And that was called a juice store. And it was, that's when you think, yeah. When I think of that. And he had, there wasn't a bench. Yes, there was a bench. Then he had some wooden boxes turned down on the other side of the door. It was just a little place, you know. You know how the western towns early would be, with that straight little board across the top, and to look as much like a store as it could be. And they'd sit out there on this side and then on that side. And then the sun would move, and it would get around, you know, then they'd go on the opposite side of the street, wherever the sun shone. And, and when it was cold, hot, then they'd take to the shade.
Oh, just chilly for the weather.
But this poor little woman, she was very, very, very unhappy. Very unhappy. Now, you must remember, that woman could neither read nor write.
Did she have any children?
Oh, yes, she had. Well, not so many. She had a daughter. But she, a very nice girl, and she went to the St. Benedict's Mission. Very nice girl, of course, read, right? But that little woman couldn't, and I wonder if he could. He might have had an idea, but I doubt it, although he did was a storekeeper. I doubt that he did. But, and his juice store, wasn't it awful? And you know, you see a customer coming, why he'd jump up from this box and go in the store and serve the customer. And their meat was there, and everything was there, like somewhat like a general store. And they'd cut off chunks, if it was 3 pounds, it was at all. If you had just so much money and you asked for 2 pounds, and they happened to cut off 2.5 or 3 pounds, it went for the price of the two full of this or that, that was all mistaken, that was all right. And they never had the weight right. They were always juggling the weights, and they never knew when they had. Oh dear, when I think of it. That was a mystery to them, the weight, the weight. Well, he lived and he sort of prospered to the extent that long as his money lasted him. He had quite a bit of money, you know, so he's selling his land. And as long as that lasted, his store flourished.
He supported the store, I suppose.
Yeah, he supported the store. That's just what. And his store flourished. for the customer coming in now and then. But this wife of his was, oh, she just was terrible. They lived together for a number of years. I don't know how they happened to separate. He got to stepping out, of course. And he went to Detroit Lakes and found himself a nice, comely dishwasher. Brought her back and married her. So the story goes.
Oh, wow.
Put that on. But anyway, he married this other one and brought her back. Doesn't concern. And for a while, he lived in the front part of this. It was just one of these extra tall shack, because, you know, the smaller little houses have those, just a little attic up. And then, somewhat like a garret,
mm-hmm.
you know, that goes across. Just a garret the lower part. But this was extra built, so it had about a story and a half that we'd call it a day. So, and there must have been about four rooms, at least maybe two down and two up. So in the front part, his daughter was grown up by then, and she was married, and she lived. So, no, in the front part, he lived with his new bride, and his daughter was living in the back. So the mother, the real mother, came to visit the daughter, and she lived in the back half, and the husband in the front half, the little mother wife. Well, that was all. Oh, but she was going to get even with him. She was going to get even with him. She just came down to do some business, some kind, with the office there. And she said, I've got plenty of money. And she was coming to Minneapolis and St. Paul to live now. And she had a wad of money out fully. Well, I don't know what it looked like. Why, it was immense. Here it stuck out in a great big bunch in her stocking. Imagine her. I bet she got here with it all right. she got here. But anyway, she was going to get even with him. So she came down here and found herself a boyfriend in St. Paul. Back she went. And I went right out, she said, and I bought my trousseau. And she selected a white satin, the veil, the white pumps and shoes. And what else did she have? Oh, yeah, she had a wreath, too.
Oh, she married him.
Oh, she was getting even with him now because he had married his slouch, mm-hmm. as she called
him. She married the boyfriend.
Oh no, she just had this boyfriend, but she was sending her up. She came to Whiteleaf. And you know that village, when it rains, you just sink in mud to the hubs of the wheels in those days. She came across from Ogima to Whiteleaf. And the next, I wonder where she hid all that day. She waited till she knew it was an hour when most people would be crawling out, you know, getting around those little stores and going to and things. So down he came with his white, and it had rained and rained and rained, you know, it was in the fall at this time. Wet and black mud every place. So down she came in this satin robe and white shoes and this long white veil, and she'd walk up and down in front of his store and walk up and down. Finally, what happened to her when she got down to the end? I think she but didn't she slip or something? No. When she'd go before his house, go before his door, when she'd walk back up there, she'd stop and she'd go. Well, this is what Mary told me. I didn't see her do that part. But she stopped from the door and hold up her this white dress on both sides and said, diddly-yum-dum-dum, diddly-yum-dum-dum, do a little dance.
To take old Mary Glashfield.
Oh, Matt Glashfield, she's calling to him.
Well,
this is terrible talk. Tell those people's names to him. It's an awful thing. It isn't on, is it?
We'll take them out, the name.
By that little Jew story, you see. Each time she'd hold up the dress and do that little dance, and then she'd walk. And you can imagine the mud, that the shape that that woman was in before she got through. And it started to really rain, dark and cloudy. I don't know where the spirit went. She just flew back. Oh, I draw the moon. And then we'd go on a ways, and she'd say some little phrases in her own way, and then I'd put the sun after that. And you'd just die, and then other places would be stars. Those all meant something. They knew what they meant.
This was her sentiment.
That was her code.
Uh-huh.
They knew. I didn't know what it was. And she'd have had me put all those things in for.
Would he have a moon and a star and a...
No, I never saw any of his letters.
How did she read them?
I don't know. I don't know who read them for her.
She wouldn't bring them to you?
Oh, no, she never brought those to me. She never brought those. She's supposed to be a bunch of novels, you know.
Well, first you have to tell about Uncle George a little bit.
Poor Uncle George. And you know how she just placed herself as the heroine in this novel. Therefore, she read this one day by day with it. But you know the part was, I'll never forget that. Well, now there were those men. Were their faces red? They would have killed me had I looked at them too hard, because they knew I knew all this story. Just think of it. And they were going to, they were forming a corporation. And they all put in quite a bit of money. And she was going to put in $20,000. And she was an heiress, an English heiress. And this money, she was to have this money at a certain date. Now, wasn't she clever? A certain date. And, of course, they didn't let me know too much about it. About everybody, you know, their business. And they were to meet down there at the bank. They had their office. A certain night, well, it seems to me they had been meeting with her quite often. Oh, there was quite a bit of excitement. Because they were going to get her at least $20,000 with them. That was a good start. With what they had to put in, each one was going to put a number of $1,000 in. Each, but I guess the others were going to put in $10,000. A piece, and she was going to put in a $20,000. So there was four of them, and there was some wild land they were going to buy. See, and they were forming this corporation to take care of that land. When they told me about it, Frederick said something to me about it. I said, she is an heiress, and he was very indignant. Now, why do you say those things? Of course, you don't. Well, I said, I'm quite positive she isn't an heiress, and you know, George had met her at school. And George, he was always looking for a wealthy widow with lots of money, you know. So he met this girl at school, and she's really living today. He met this girl at school, and she told him this big story, don't you see? That she was really an heiress, and I don't know what you'd say, but was certainly not living as an heiress. Her people, like those little stories used to be, didn't want her to have the money, and they had... gotten rid of her and sent her away to this government school so that she'd be unknown to the outer world.
They lived in England.
And they were in England, and her uncle's name was Lord Russell. I remember that distinctly. I said, did she have correspondence from me? Why, yes. She brought a letter. Now, wasn't she terrible? She brought a letter. Oh, they did everything under the sun to make it solid, no mistake. They had her bring letters, they had her bring a reference, and they had her... I wonder who she got to help her. I don't know. Well, maybe this writer that came to see me. I don't know. And, they actually believed. M.J. Cobb did. Now, he was a businessman, and he was investing his wife's money. It was a lot he was investing in that. Good. But towards the end, Frederick began to get suspicious. He didn't know where they lived down here, didn't know anything about it. So it bothered him too much to put that much money in without knowing where it was. Came down the floor reading, and entirely different from what he would expect, you know. And he said, there she chattered, and he listened to her. And she chattered about having that, she told George that she had had a letter from, she named the person, of course, and they were having all the monograms changed on the silver. It's a deadline for this corporation. It was all fixed and cut and dried then. And so they went back, and he said no, he wasn't investing. Was. And she told him that just out of, must have been what is we know as Midway today, that just out of, between St. Paul and Midway, there was a place you came, and it says that it was called Evansville. He too was a relative. they were English people, but their holdings, they still had holdings here in the United States. And this great, great, immense estate had an iron gate that went over that way. And the name Evansville was around that. And anyone could find it easily. Didn't you take chances? He wasn't going to be convinced them anymore because he'd worked too hard. And they didn't want to give up that corporation and that $20,000. So he took M.J. Cobb with him. We'll go, we'll come back. We'll come back on the flyer. We'll be in plenty time to finish their business, as they walked and they looked at every record and everything they could find, no trace of Evansville. So he said, well, as whatever she described the place as, they went to that. He said, there was an old shoemaker living there and something else around. He said, now, if that place had been there and those people had been there for years and years, they'd know something about it. If any people have that, there was somebody that years ago that used to live there. Now, you see how that would lead anyone on? Mm-hmm. But they didn't remember the name. I suppose she did find somebody's estate, maybe Jim Hills or somebody's. That corporation, she'd been safe. She had lied, but their money was all in. They'd have to, she could, well, she was in on the corporation. She'd draw her, just like any of them. That's what she was going to do. He said he just simply changed his mind. There was going to be no corporation formed. Was she infuriated, and did she holler and cry? Oh, that was terrible. And of course, Uncle George thought he was going to be a millionaire right away with all the income that would be coming, and that certainly was a rough place. But that was just too much. If your father hadn't gone that last trip,